Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. I'm here with Katie Peel from the Women's Studies and Resource Center at UNCW. We're talking about Women's History Month, third wave feminism, and how gender equality issues confront us today. You're invited to join the discussion. Do you think a glass ceiling still exists for women? Is there too much hysteria about the way women are portrayed in the media? How do you encounter gender stereotypes in your life? Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at coastlinehqr. Katie Peel, there are some notions about traditional femininity. And you have studied Victorian literature, for example, which is where a lot of these notions came from. Is that correct?
We tend to associate it with the Victorians, yeah, and their separate spheres ideology. Yeah.
What are some of those characteristics of this so-called traditional femininity?
Sure. Having to do with locating the woman in the home, right? This idea that the public space is for men, the private space, the home space is for women, and therefore women are unfit for things that happen in the public. For example, work is one of those things, but also anything having to do with anything political ideas, et cetera.
Okay. And is that something that you think is still present today, that a notion like that?
Oh, sure. I mean, we're still having these conversations about should women go back to work after having children, right? So that comes up regularly. So, and that's largely rooted in this idea that women are the ones who ought to stay at home and be the guardians of hearth and home, right?
We hear so much about biology and anthropology versus social conditioning and social constructs. So many people will say things like, you know, feminine people are naturally passive, they're receptive, peacemakers. Is that a function? Does it fall somewhere on a spectrum, or is that strictly a social construct? Could that be part biology? How does that fall into a feminist view of the world?
I would encourage people to at least think of it as being on a spectrum that allows for more flexibility, I think. I would also encourage people to remember that when we're thinking about these biological arguments, that even the ways that we think about science and understand science are socially constructed, right? I mean, years ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, a study came out saying that the way that we had that we've been talking about, for example, conception, is actually not the case. Like, when we learn about it in school, you know, the egg is just kind of passively lying there and waiting for, you know, the strong swimming sperm, you know, to implant. And then, you know, the study came out and said, well, actually, there are these little cilia on the egg that actively draw the sperm in. So how have we been thinking about that and gendering just that act? Right? And that's socially constructed. So I would like to, you know, encourage people to think of it at least as a blend or somewhere on the spectrum, if not more socially constructed than not.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Dr. Katie Peel from UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center about Women's History Month and third wave feminism and what gender equality issues still confront us today. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email from Jim who says, do female students and young women in general realize that there has been a steady battle, he says, from the religious and political right against their right to control their own bodies? Are they concerned about it? Are they willing to fight back? How would you respond to that, Dr. Peel?
First of all, thank you for the question, Jim. It depends on the student, right? Some students, I would be very wary of generalizing here, but some of our students are very, very actively involved and politically aware. For example, we have a student NARAL organization that is our reproductive justice organization, and they are very much involved in keeping other students aware. But, you know, we it's very easy for all of us, but particularly for college students, you know, taking a number of courses and probably working jobs, to just to live in their own kind of bubble and disengage from the world beyond. So, and that's one of our problems. And part of that is also too, with the strides that we've made with second wave feminism, we have the luxury, and young people have the luxury today, of thinking that, wow, look, we've made so much progress, we can relax now, right? But certainly that's not the case, and that's dangerous.
And, you know, we're also getting into some potentially divisive waters here when we associate gender equality issues with political positions. Is that something that you can tease apart? I mean, you know, in Jim's email, he's talking about the conservative right. Mm-hmm. But is it possible that there are conservative right-wingers who still very much see gender equality issues as something worth striving towards?
I would certainly hope so. That, my goodness, I hope so.
I mean, can you take this out of the politics is what I'm asking.
Right. It's hard to. It's hard to, especially in today's political climate, when so much, even if looking at our own state, so much of the recent legislature is targeting issues of women's health, right? And not only issues of women's health, but other feminist issues like targeting our education system, all of those, the legislation targeting voting access. These are all very much feminist issues. And so it's hard to extricate that right now from the political scene.
We had a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but she left a comment. Carolyn says, the company that I've worked for, which is a very large company here in town, discourages employees from letting others know how much money we make. That's not uncommon, I have to say. I have a PhD, she says, and I know that some of the guys coming in make a lot more money, though they have a lot less experience.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Is that something, Dr. Katie Peel, that is a common? We were talking earlier about the wage gap and how we've narrowed it by a penny. Yeah. You said we're now at 78 cents on the dollar versus men. How is that measured and how prevalent is it?
Unfortunately, far too prevalent, right? And there are distinctions across across disciplines, but largely, you know, and it is an average, certainly. Largely, it's I mean, it's still there. If we look at in terms of wages, in terms of distribution of jobs, I mean, I think the Chronicle of Higher Education just published yesterday that only, I want to say, 4% of university presidents are women, right? So when we're talking about the glass ceiling, I mean, that's job number one right there in terms of the higher education ladder. And there's still an inequality there.
Is it ironic that in the world of academia, which is so much about ideas, that some sort of general stodginess might exist there?
Yeah, sadly.
Is it possible that women play a role in that? I mean, how is there a danger in saying there's a glass ceiling or there's an obstacle for women or there's something in their way? Is there a danger that that will become a self-fulfilling prophecy for some women?
Perhaps, and it's certainly, you know, when we say that there are these obstacles, we don't always mean men, right? But women can be some of the worst enemies against other women, and many of these are institutionalized practices, right? So it's not just that we're fighting individuals; it's on a number of levels. And going back to Carolyn's issue. A lot of, you know, change has to happen on a lot of levels. We've got companies needing to actively monitor and address these issues within their own practices. We've got policy makers. The Equal Pay Act hasn't been updated, I think, since 1963. And then on an individual level, again, going back to that socialization, right, men are socialized to negotiate those job offers in ways that women aren't, you know, and that's the American Association for University Women runs annually a Start Smart workshop, and Dr. Michelle Scanton-Tessier is running that for us next week for our university women students, just to teach them ways to negotiate their first job offer, because when I was offered the job for the director of the Women's Studies and Resource Center, I knew that, especially coming into this job, I had to negotiate, right? Because that's what I had to do. But one of the first things in my head was, wow, but I don't want them to think that I'm greedy, right? So, and that's how we're socialized, even though we know better. So a lot has to happen.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Women's History Month, third wave feminism, and how gender equality issues still crop up today. With us to answer your questions, Dr. Katie Peel, director of UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. And Hank, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Or is this Peter?
Oh, it's Peter.
Hi, Peter. Sorry about that.
Hi.
Welcome to Coastline.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I have a rather unusual perspective on this. I'm a non-traditional male, and I do believe that women will never get what they're looking for in terms of equality until there's a recognition that men also are in need of liberation, and there's resistance from both men and women alike for men to change and to embrace parts of themselves that we traditionally classify as feminine behavior.
And Peter, can you tell us specifically what ways you think men need to be liberated? Specifically, how do the limits manifest themselves for you?
Well, the limits manifest themselves from a standpoint of what men... I understand that women are limited in terms of how they are... the opportunities from financial and job and other opportunities. But men are limited from a perspective of how they're allowed to express themselves. They are basically told that anything that we perceive as feminine is off limits to them. So they are kind of put in a little box, and basically society insists that they do A, B, and C, and that anything over on the other spectrum of gender continuum is off limits. And not only is it off limits, but if they do express a desire for anything along those lines, they will be treated not very nicely from both sides.
There will be consequences for that. And Peter, it's interesting what you're talking about is these traditional notions of femininity, the feminine stereotypes, are putting men in a box, is what you're saying.
They are putting men in a box, and because of, I think, early feminism that rejected certain behaviors from men, were told basically that as they had been previously living was not any longer acceptable. But they had no place to go as an alternative, because if they behaved in a different way, such as if they were more expressive, then that was also condemned. So they really had no place to go.
Dr. Katie Peel, what would you say to Peter in this notion that he's in a similar circumstance, he feels?
Right. And thank you, Peter, for your input. And I agree with you in that gender roles and stereotypes limit everyone, right? It's, you know, I mean, the feminist movement, we think of women's rights as fighting just for this one particular gender, but there are many genders, of course, and no one wins. Well, no, I'm not going to say that, but because certain people do win. But gender roles and stereotypes limit everyone. And part of, you know, we've seen historically what began as women's studies programs, many are now morphing into women's and gender studies programs, right, to bring this critical lens to all genders and study different, you know, masculinities, right? Masculinity studies is now being integrated into women's and gender studies. And, for example, we have this semester, one of our women's and gender studies instructors is teaching a course on masculinities in film, right, which explores, you know, all of the, you know, a range of ways to be masculine, incorporating, you know, like what we think of as traditionally more feminine qualities.
Dr. Peel, why is it so threatening for some people to have men or women come at these non-traditional gender stereotypes? I mean, why does Peter, for instance, suffer when he might embrace what might be called a traditionally feminine side of himself, or express in a way that our culture today might categorize as feminine? Why is that so threatening?
Right. I wish I could tell you if I knew. It has to do with power. It has to do with power, and it has to do with fear of change. So, and people get nervous when they can't identify something, when they don't recognize something, and it largely has to do with our own our securities and insecurities about ourselves and what it means for ourselves.
Peter, thank you so much for your call. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about Women's History Month, what we still have to learn, how the expression of gender equality is changing, and what role third wave feminism plays in all of this. We're talking with Dr. Katie Peel, director of UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And I think we have Hank now on the line. Hank, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, everybody. Hi, Dr. Peel.
Hi, Hank.
Good to hear from you. Hey, my question is, I guess, kind of based around the history section of Women's History Month. And it's in response to, I guess, Peter's comments about traditional masculinity and also to the earlier discussion of first and second wave feminism. And that's, I mean, for me, what I've found has been one of the most kind of startling and crucial insights of feminism is the reconsideration of history through the perspective of gender, right? So this thing that we call, you know, traditional masculinity or femininity isn't kind of something that exists outside of history. It's something that was constructed at a specific time for a specific reason as a response to specific social and economic circumstances. And so my question is, I guess I'd just ask you to speak a little bit to this whole idea of feminist reconsideration of history through that lens.
Okay. Thank you, Hank. I appreciate that. We can – part of the second wave feminist movement was largely invested in these recovery projects, right? Because part of the thing was in terms of history and women's writing – much of that was lost, right? Because it wasn't celebrated, it wasn't valued. When we think of, you know, Hank, I know that you know literary history. You know, when we talk about literature, you know, we're still very much invested in the canon, which tends to be a lot of writing by straight white men, who might also be dead, right? So there's that, and so part of the second wave movement was to go back and recover a lot of women's work, a lot of women's history, a lot of women's narratives and experiences, right? And make those visible, make those more known, and then part of that was going back to the history that we did know or thought we knew, and look at it again through the critical lenses of gender and then class and race and all of that as well. And it brings us to a different but a newer and hopefully more comprehensive understanding.
And it's interesting you talk about recovery work. Zora Neale Hurston's work was part of that, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
And Alice Walker played a role in that. And you did, we're going to break in just a couple of minutes, but you did some local recovery work with your students and discovered something about one of the buildings on the UNCW campus. Is that right?
It wasn't me, but it was Dr. Sarah Hollenbeck. And I believe Hank actually might have been in that class. I'm not remembering exactly, but Shannon Morton, she's the woman the English department building is named after, and they went to our local archives and dug up material about her, and I believe we'll be presenting it locally.
Do you know when that'll be presented?
Oh, is goodness. Still... My guess is that it will be part of the English in Action Showcase, which will probably be at the end of April.
Okay. Hank, thank you so much for your call. We have a quick email. Gender equality, does Dr. Peel? And we'll get to this after the break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, and that's from our friend Anne. We'll read her email in just a moment. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio is Dr. Katie Peel from UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. We're talking about Women's History Month and how this history can be an indicator, the way we treat it, of current gender equality issues. We'll be back in 90 seconds. You're listening to Coastline.